Okay, well, I guess I should say good evening for those of you on the East Coast, and welcome to everyone. Thanks for being with us. I'm Noah Rubenstein, the founder of GoodTherapy.org, and I'm pleased to welcome all of you here to our 8th Open to the Public teleconference. We do many of these for our professional members, typically 2 a month, but this has been a relatively new offering from us, these public teleconferences, and I really hope that you get what you're looking to get out of this today. Today's event is Low Self-Esteem, Signs, Symptoms, and Solutions, presented by Tina Gilbertson. I'm thrilled and feel just privileged to have Tina with us today to present on self-esteem, a topic that I never lose interest in. I'm going to introduce Tina in a couple of minutes, but first a handful of announcements. To reduce background noise, everyone has been automatically muted. We do this, again, just because of feedback and noise and whatnot. However, we very much welcome you to speak up during Q&A periods. You can unmute your phone by pressing *6 on your telephone keypad, and when you press *6, you'll hear a message letting you know that you're unmuted. It'll say muted canceled. So some people think that means meeting canceled, but it's muted canceled, so don't be afraid if you hear that message.
Hello.
And you can toggle back and forth.
no, I want to go.
Sorry about that noise there. I just changed something, so we won't have that for a minute. So you can toggle back and forth between mute and unmute as often as you need by pressing *6. If for any reason you get disconnected from the teleconference, please know you can dial back in using the same dial-in number and code. In case there are any good therapy.org member therapists or other licensed therapists joining us today, please know that we're not offering a CE certificate for today's event since it's geared toward non-therapists. With that said, it's my pleasure to welcome and introduce you to Tina Gilbertson. Tina's been developing and teaching programs in personal growth since 2001 and currently offers workshops on both self-esteem and assertiveness at her office in Portland, Oregon. Tina is a self-esteem topic expert for GoodTherapy.org. She's been doing that for us for nearly 2 years, and Tina's been reading, thinking, studying, and writing about the subject for over 25 years. In her private therapy practice, Tina works with individuals and groups to improve self-esteem and deepen relationships of all kinds, including the all-important relationship people have with themselves. Tina also regularly presents interactive lectures on how to stay mentally sharp throughout life, how to deal with difficult emotions, and how to identify and pursue the work you were born to do. To learn more about Tina, you can visit her profile on goodtherapy.org by doing a Portland, Oregon search and finding her listing, or you can just go directly to her website at www.tinagilbertson.com, and we will send a follow-up email tomorrow that will include that URL. So be on the lookout for that. So Tina, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Noah. I appreciate the introduction, and I want to extend a welcome to everybody who's here. I'm really glad that you're here today. Self-esteem is such an important topic to me, and I think it's pretty central to our quality of life. I've actually been interested in self-esteem since I was introduced to the concept as a teenager. I don't exactly remember the day I learned the concept, but I do remember that my first thought was probably something like, wow, this is important. And then, unfortunately, my second thought after that was pretty much, boy, it's a good thing I've got such great self-esteem. So that's really what I thought when I was 19. So cut to 10 years later. I'm living in New York City in my late 20s, and I'm working in television and pretty happy, but not entirely fulfilled. All of my friends at the time were urging me to get a therapist. Why? Because when you live in Manhattan and you work in television, therapy is a way of life. It's part of your lifestyle. You find a therapist, and then you see that person until one of you dies. And if it's the therapist who dies first, then you find another one and repeat the process. So therapy was very, very much a part of the culture that I was in, and I decided to give it a try. To be honest, for the first couple of months that I was in therapy, I was kind of thinking, I don't really need to be here. But then, just a couple of months in, after I'd started seeing a therapist who happened to be an excellent therapist, and she happened to be a social worker in private practice, a couple of months after I started seeing her, I was walking down the street one day, and a shocking thing happened. I was really not thinking about much of anything, just really standing on the sidewalk waiting for the traffic to change. And suddenly this thought came to me. It was a thought, but also a feeling. And it was, I suck. And, you know, it's not a very attractive word, but that's exactly the word I heard. I suck. And this blew me away. This came out of nowhere, as far as I knew. But I realized that that thought, that belief, had been with me the whole time. I was carrying it around with me, whether I knew it or not. And after a few months of therapy, it spontaneously broke through into my awareness. Well, at that point, I knew that I had stuff to work on. And working on self-esteem is, for me, I think, a lifelong process. Later, when we talk about solutions, I'll talk a little bit more about my self-esteem journey. But before we go any further, I want to encourage you to get something to write with, because I'm going to ask you to write and draw at various times during the program, and it will be helpful for you to have paper rather than a computer, if you can, paper and a pen or pencil. That way you'll be able to take notes, and it will be really helpful if you can write down any questions that come up as we're going through, so that you can remember them for the Q&A period. I will hopefully take questions during the presentation, but I'm going to see how we do on time. There's a lot of material to get through. We will definitely have time for questions at the end. So please get something to write with if you possibly can. And while you do that, I'll just give you a real quick overview of what we're going to do today. After some preliminary remarks, I'm going to go right into 7 signs and symptoms of low self-esteem. And from there, we're going to talk a little bit about where your self-esteem level comes from. And that will lead us right into solutions to address low self-esteem. So the first thing I would like you to do, if you have something to write with, and if you don't, you can memorize it, is, without thinking too hard about it, write down a number between 1 and 10 that you feel reflects your current level of self-esteem, with the higher the number being higher self-esteem. The 10 would be the highest self-esteem you could enjoy. Just write whatever number comes to you. We're going to return to that number a little bit later. Now, before talking about some specific symptoms of low self-esteem, I think it might be worth just saying a word about the definition of self-esteem. Self-esteem is one of those concepts that invites a lot of different definitions, most of which involve the idea of rating yourself on some scale of success as a human being. I don't prefer the rating or evaluative approach to the definition of self-esteem. My definition is, self-esteem is the natural state of the human psyche. Healthy self-esteem, in particular, is the natural state of the human psyche. The word psyche means mind, soul, spirit. It's an interesting word that means a lot of things. This has nothing to do with arrogance, egotism, selfishness, or conceit. This is about health. The natural state of the human psyche is like the natural state of the human body. A body that is not diseased or dysfunctional is healthy. You can't be too healthy, nor can you have too much self-esteem by this definition. I think it's natural to feel comfortable in your own skin, to forgive yourself for mistakes, to be willing to set goals and work toward them, to enjoy fulfilling relationships with other people. Look at babies. Babies come into the world, they're comfortable in their skin, maybe not physically if they're wet, but psychologically they're not too concerned about who they are and whether they're worthy. They seem perfectly willing to forgive themselves for mistakes. And when they set goals and work toward them, well, they just do it. I see a shiny thing. I want that. I'm going to go for it. And they seek out relationships with others and seem very fulfilled by those. These things are your birthright. I believe you can heal from low self-esteem and get back the healthy self-esteem you were born with. And you're certainly worth the effort of trying. I hope that everybody has the handouts for this talk, because I want to refer to handout 5. Handout 5 is the reciprocal relationship between self-esteem and behavior. It's not titled that way. It just shows a circle made up of two arrows that seem to be chasing each other's tails. And one arrow represents self-esteem, and the other is behavior. And what I'm getting at here is that your level of self-esteem influences your behavior, which in turn feeds back into your level of self-esteem. So low self-esteem leads to low self-esteem behaviors. And when you engage in low self-esteem behaviors, your self-esteem stays low. The good news about this sort of vicious circle is that once you intervene, new behaviors feed into a new improved self-esteem and vice versa. It goes from a vicious circle into a, forget what you call the other one, a happy circle. So it's important to understand the reciprocal relationship, because we are going to talk about behaviors today. I'm going to list 7 symptoms of low self-esteem. There are more than 7, but 7 is what we have time for today. And I think they're broad enough that most people will find something to identify with here. I want to remind you that no single behavior alone by itself is a surefire sign of low self-esteem. You can't pick out low self-esteem just because someone engages in one particular behavior. It's a pattern of behaviors that points to a level of self-esteem. You might want to make a note of these 7 as we go through them. Also, remember to write down any questions that come up, because I definitely want to address them. The first symptom of low self-esteem that I'd like to talk about is personalizing failure. Personalizing failure means when something bad happens to you, it feels like it's your fault. It's good to take responsibility for things that are within your control, but the person with low self-esteem assumes that every bad thing that happens is a reflection of their badness. Is this something that you do? Picture the following situations. I'm going to name 3 scenarios. And I'd like you to think about them and pay attention to your first thoughts about each one as I say them. And you may want to write something down, just a few words, what comes to your head when I mention each of the following scenarios. The first one, you trip on the sidewalk. The second one, your investments take an unexpected downturn. What goes through your head? first one was you trip on the sidewalk. Second one, your investments take an unexpected downturn. And the third situation, your car breaks down on the freeway. What goes through your mind when you imagine yourself in those scenarios? These are things that could happen to anyone. But the person with low self-esteem is very likely to blame himself. The second symptom that I want to address of low self-esteem is avoiding intimacy. Now, I'm defining intimacy not as sex, but as knowing and being known by another. I'm talking about emotional closeness. Intimacy is frightening when self-esteem is low because of a fear of rejection. If I have low self-esteem and I let you get close to me and really see who I am, you won't like me. That's the fear. And so intimacy has to be avoided, even though we all have a need for closeness. It's quite a painful situation. We both desire and fear intimacy. An example of avoiding intimacy is when someone shares information freely with almost anyone, but has no close friends. You may have known someone who will talk your ear off about very personal things in their lives, but you get the feeling that they're not truly close with you or maybe with anyone. Another example of avoiding intimacy is being cheerful all the time. The strategy of being cheerful all the time is to draw people to you, to be acceptable, to be a pleasant presence for other people. But in a way, being cheerful all the time keeps people away. You're not showing them who you are, because nobody is cheerful all the time. So the first symptom of low self-esteem that I talked about was personalizing failure. And the second is avoiding intimacy. The third symptom I want to talk about is dishonesty with self or others. Dishonesty is usually an attempt to avoid pain. We're dishonest with ourselves when it would seem to be painful to tell ourselves the truth. We're dishonest with others when we want to avoid conflict. Dishonesty definitely feeds back and makes us feel bad about ourselves. That's that reciprocal relationship I was talking about between self-esteem and behavior. It affects our ability to trust ourselves, which is a huge loss. So dishonesty is the third symptom of low self-esteem. The fourth one is passivity. The passive person doesn't try things that are new or set goals for herself. She may be self-neglectful. She may not even know what she wants, let alone whether she deserves anything. She may be passive because she's afraid of failure, because failure is personal. She doesn't want to make mistakes, so it's better not to do anything at all. An example of being passive is refusing to set or work toward goals, having no goals. Another example of passivity may be waiting for other people to call rather than ever calling them and facing rejection, potentially. Passivity feels safer than being active and putting ourselves out there. And that's the fourth symptom of low self-esteem. The fifth one is avoiding mistakes. Low self-esteem encourages you to avoid mistakes because mistakes are seen as confirmation that you are bad. You are wrong. To avoid mistakes, sometimes it's necessary to be dishonest with ourselves or other people. You can see how these behaviors interrelate and feed off each other. So an example of avoiding mistakes might be refusing to play a game that you're not good at. Sometimes people who avoid mistakes get reputations as a control freak. Now, there are other reasons why control might be attractive, but avoiding experiencing a mistake is one thing that might motivate a desire for control. Unfortunately, since all humans are prone to mistakes, this can lead to a severe limiting of experience. Social anxiety is an example where people fear mistakes so much that they limit their socializing because of it. So the sixth symptom after avoiding mistakes is insecurity. Insecurity means I feel like my self-worth is always in question. I'm only good when I do good things. And the good things I do have a very short shelf life. When I'm insecure, I feel like I have to earn my way into others' good graces. It's terrible not to be able to rest with the notion that I'm okay. I'm basically good. I can rest for a bit without having to earn anything. Even refusing to state your restaurant preference when people are saying, hey, where should we go out to eat, could be a sign of insecurity if you're unwilling to risk disapproval or ridicule by stating your preference. Insecurity is kind of a catch-all for the other ones that we've talked about. Because, frankly, these make you feel pretty insecure. The seventh and last symptom of low self-esteem that I want to mention right now is a big one. It's relationship problems. All of the preceding signs and symptoms of low self-esteem make it very difficult to embrace relationships and function effectively in them. When I talk about relationship problems, I'm not talking about transitory problems. I'm talking about more pervasive and repetitive issues that come up in all kinds of relationships. Relationship problems tend to pervade not just romantic relationships, but also friendships and family relationships. Because the skills required for good relating are totally hampered by low self-esteem. Intimacy, honesty, trusting your partner, taking initiative. These are the things that make for good relationships. And they're sorely hampered when self-esteem is low. So the seven symptoms that I talked very briefly about are personalizing failure, avoiding intimacy, being dishonest, being passive instead of active, avoiding mistakes, feeling insecure, and experiencing relationship problems. So I think, Noah, that there is time for a question or two. I feel like I went over that pretty quickly, and I'd like to just make sure that people are with me at this point.
Okay, great. Yeah, so I would love to get questions. So if you have questions or you want to share some feedback about anything we've talked about, you're more than welcome to speak up. All questions, all feelings are welcome. You can unmute your phone by pressing *6 on your telephone keypad. And just so you know, Tina, it usually takes people a few moments to unmute.
Yeah.
Any questions?
I have a question.
Great.
Yeah.
Is it possible to overcome self-esteem? Is it something that it really had to be as done when one was young, or is it something that is extremely difficult to deal with at an older age?
That is a great question. Is this something that is over and done with when you're young and really, really hard to fix when you're older? Is it even possible to heal from this when you're older? Did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay, great. I definitely believe that self-esteem is something that can be healed at any age. Certainly when you're very young, you're at your most impressionable time, and we're going to look at that in the very next section. Your identity is forming while your self-esteem is being developed for the first time in your life. So there's a really strong tendency that's formed. And yet, now that you're an adult, your self-esteem is a relationship that is under your control. It's you in relationship to yourself, and you can give yourself the things that you need to heal. And I'm going to talk about what those things are.
Okay.
Tina.
Yeah.
This is Noah. I just wanted to share a little bit in response to the caller's question, and that is, just from my own experience, I've seen, felt my self-esteem grow as I've aged, and as I've done my own therapy, and sort of tending to those younger parts of me that were burdened with not feeling good about themselves, or had experiences where they felt worthless or not lovable, things like that. So it can be a process. You know, and it's not easy sometimes going to those places, but I've certainly seen my self-esteem improve. I feel much more solid and grounded than I was 20 years ago. And so I just want to, I guess I want to say that to support anybody that's concerned about their own self-esteem. So it can be done.
Thank you for that, Noah. I second that emotion.
Yeah. You're welcome.
So unless we have other questions, maybe I should move on.
Hi, this is Debbie.
Oh, Debbie?
Just one comment.
Yeah.
Well, I rated myself as a 7-8, but after you went through your things, I probably dropped just a little bit. So, because there's some things that I probably hadn't considered. So that was kind of helpful.
Great.
So thank
you. I'm glad. You're welcome.
Do we hit just *6 to put it back on mute?
Yes.
Yeah, you can do that.
Thank you.
Thanks. And thanks to both of you for taking a moment to speak up. And
yeah, I just want to acknowledge that it's very hard. I know it's extremely hard for me to speak up when I'm on a call, and I don't know how many other people are out there listening. I feel really self-conscious. So I think people who speak up and ask questions are very, very brave, and I really appreciate you because I learn from the questions I get. So unless there are other questions, I'm going to move on to the next section, and do write your questions down because there will be another Q&A period. Are we ready, Noah?
Oh, yes.
Okay, great. So talking about a solution to low self-esteem, in my mind, necessitates looking at the origins of self-esteem. If you're at all like me, as soon as you hear the word origins, your eyes start to glaze over, and you start to think, well, why do we have to talk about origins? Why can't we just move forward from here? Why can't we all just agree that we want to work on self-esteem and move forward? Well, that's a perfectly natural desire, but I feel that we need to look back in order to look forward, because I don't know how to change a problem that I don't understand. Imagine that you are a car mechanic, and someone comes in and they want you to fix their car, and you say, okay, well, pop the hood, and I'll see what's wrong with it. And they say, no, I don't want you looking under the hood. I just want you to fix the car. Well, that's kind of like what we would do if we didn't pop the hood on the low self-esteem and look at the origins. Because low self-esteem is different in different people. We've all got a different story, and we've all got different areas where our self-esteem has been injured. So, popping the hood on low self-esteem means looking back at childhood. And as soon as I say that, I often get looks from people when I'm in person with people, and they say, I really don't want to blame my parents for my current problems. And they say, I really don't want to live in the past. I want to live in the present. And the thing about looking at childhood is not looking for blame or you know, wanting to be stuck in the past. The point that I made earlier in answer to the question, the point in looking at childhood is to acknowledge that your identity was being formed along with your self-esteem a long time ago, and that's where we need to look for the answers to what's going on right now. It may also relieve you to know that, or not, that normal parenting usually involves some injury to a child's natural self-esteem. It hardly seems possible to raise and socialize a child without injuring their self-esteem in some way. The reason for that is that when a child hears, no, don't do that, I don't like that, which of course is necessary to socialize, to teach a child right from wrong, the child doesn't have the sophistication to sort through the context and figure out, okay, well, my behavior is not appropriate in this situation. I'm a good person, but my behavior is bad. That's too sophisticated. A child says, mom's mad because I'm bad. It's very simple. There's a sort of a famous daddy drinks because I cry statement. I don't know if you guys have heard that. That is a classic example of a child taking on responsibility for anything that goes wrong in their environment. So all of us have injured self-esteem to varying degrees, and it's not necessary to blame your parents or to feel like you're stuck in the past by acknowledging what was true for you when you were small. The past is alive in the present. And that's great news, because you're in the present and that's where you can work on stuff. But what you don't acknowledge controls you. What you don't acknowledge controls you. Let's look at handout one, then and now. There's a diagram on the left-hand side under the word then that shows a big person and a little person. And the little person is you, and the big person is an important caregiver, maybe a parent or someone important to you when you were small. And you can see on the right-hand side of the handout now that this same pair, the big person and the little person, is now inside of you. Only now, both the big person and the little person are you. You are now your own caregiver. And the way you were treated in general then is the way that you treat yourself in general now. So the relationships, and there may have been more than one, with important others when you were, say, 0 to 10, define the model inside of you of how to treat yourself. And that's alive and well and living in your brain today. There are other factors in self-esteem besides the behavior of your early caregivers, but all we have time for today is to focus on early caregiving. But check out the self-esteem page on goodtherapy.org for a really good overview of self-esteem. Let's look at handout 2, which has 3 pictures of pairs of a big person and a little person. The first picture on the left is labeled critical, and you see the big person looking angry and talking smack, and the little person looking sad and crying. And in the middle, the interaction is labeled loving, and the big person and the little person seem happy, and they're enjoying some eye contact together. In the right-hand side, labeled neglectful, the big person is looking off into the distance, and the little person is wondering, am I in the room? Why am I not being paid attention to? Please listen carefully to the following sentence. These are not parenting styles. I don't mean to imply that anyone is all critical in their parenting, all loving in their parenting, or all neglectful in their parenting. These are not parenting styles. These are behavioral tones that I've drawn pictures of here. It's highly likely that the vast majority of us on this call experienced all 3 of these behaviors toward us, maybe even in the same hour from the same people. So when you see the handout, critical, loving, and neglectful, these are descriptions of moment-to-moment behavior, not parenting styles. Okay, so in handout 3, I define what I mean by each of these. In the critical column, you'll see on handout 3, you'll see behaviors described that caregivers might exhibit towards children. Under critical, it says frequently makes fun of the child, demonstrates dislike or disgust towards the child, actively rejects the child's attempts to be close, ridicules, minimizes, or gets angry at the child's expression of feelings and needs, and uses excessive punishment. These are behaviors that I've labeled critical. And they go along with the picture on handout 2 on the far left side. What do I mean by loving? We could also call this nurturing behavior. Under loving, we see validates the child's feelings, demonstrates appreciation for the child, offers non-sexual affection, makes efforts to protect the child from recognized threats, encourages the child to express herself, and uses age-appropriate, consistent discipline. These are behaviors I've labeled loving or nurturing. What do I mean by neglectful behavior from caregivers? Fails to notice significant physical or behavioral changes in the child. Fails to make efforts to protect the child from recognized threats. May see the child as an extension of self or as a partner or parent. And discipline is absent or variable. Essentially, neglectful behavior fails to recognize the needs of the child. So, given all of that, and given the fact that virtually no one parents using exclusively one style, you can draw a pie chart of your experience in childhood, and that's what I've done in Handout 4. Handout 4 is called Childhood Experiences Sample Pie Chart. And there's a note that each is just one of many possibilities. This handout looks at three different people. The person whose pie chart, and of course the pie chart is just a circle that represents a pie with different size slices in it. The person whose pie chart is on the left, their experience when they think back to childhood is, I knew I was basically loved. And you can see that the behaviors that they experienced generally consisted of about a third each, neglectful, critical, and loving behaviors. So about a third of the time, this person's caregivers seemed neglectful. About a third of the time, this person felt criticized by their caregivers. And about a third of the time, this person was the recipient of loving behavior. And they feel that, I knew I was basically loved. Well, when I look at this and I see that a third of the pie comprises loving behavior, I think, well, no wonder. That loving behavior is potent, validating the child's feelings, demonstrating appreciation, encouraging self-expression. These are potent behaviors from the caregiver to the child. And so it's not hard to believe that a person who received these behaviors a full third of the time knew they were basically loved. So that is important, and it hopefully gives parents hope, because since we're all imperfect, it's nice to know that you can get it wrong two-thirds of the time and still give your child something very valuable that they'll carry with them later. Looking at the pie chart in the middle for a different person, you see that it is about 80% critical behavior that the person received when they were a child from caregivers. And this person's memory is, I was not an easy kid to raise. Seems like this person remembers all that criticism as being legitimate. They must have been bad if they were treated that badly. There's also a big chunk of neglect and very little loving or nurturing behavior. With that much self-criticism in the pie chart, you can imagine how much self-criticism the person is now perpetrating on themselves. The pie chart on the far right may surprise you. The pie chart itself is about 85% neglectful behavior from caregivers, and the rest is loving. And the person whose childhood this was remembers that they, my parents, thought everything I did was great. I wonder if that surprises you, that a giant pie of neglect was the result or the cause of this memory. They thought everything I did was great. Well, when a child receives constant praise, they feel invisible. It's just like that kid in Handout 2 under the neglectful label who's pictured going, huh? As the caregiver fails to see him. A child who receives constant praise eventually finds that praise meaningless and just really wishes to be seen, to be experienced as they really are, which is human and imperfect, and not everything they do is great. So, if if you haven't already done so, maybe take your piece of paper and, without thinking about it too much, draw your own pie chart from your childhood. How much of that good, loving, nurturing, validating behavior did you get? How much did you feel unseen, unheard? How often did you feel like you just weren't good enough? Take a minute and either draw or think about your pie chart. Now, do you remember that number that I asked you to come up with at the beginning that is a reflection of your current self-esteem? Well, I'd like you to write that number beside the pie chart that you drew and compare them. Do they match? Does your pie chart help you explain your number? How much is your past alive in your present? Or do they not match? If they don't seem to go together, why not? What's going on? This is the beginning of a solution. There's good news and bad news about a solution to low self-esteem. The good news is you can heal self-esteem by making a thoughtful effort. The bad news is that there is no solution that I know of that's easy or quick. There are three possible avenues for healing that I want to describe to you. But first, I just want to say a word about this. Change is hard. Change is really hard. If you're like me, what you want is for the problem to solve itself. If you're like me, you want to be able to attend a talk or read a book and find that the problem is cured. I remember I bought a book years ago on concentration because I felt like my concentration wasn't very good. So I bought the book and started reading. And within a few pages, well, there were these hard, boring exercises that I was supposed to do. And I didn't want to do them. I wanted to read the book, and at the end of the book, I wanted to find that I had better concentration. But it didn't work that way. I ended up giving the book away, and my concentration never did improve. Change is hard. This is why we don't just change at will. Recognize that what you want is for the problem to be solved by reading a book or attending a talk. It's human nature. We don't want to bring difficulty and pain to ourselves. Change is hard. If you're willing to work on your healing, you'll likely feel worse before you feel better. That's another way that change is hard. But realize that healing is what's necessary here, not fixing. And a wound of any kind doesn't just heal without some pain and some time. So, to go back to the three possible avenues of solution to low self-esteem, I just realized this morning that these three start with the letters A, C, and T. Act. How perfect is that? So the A stands for awareness. We've just spent the last 50 minutes cultivating awareness of how low self-esteem perpetuates itself and where it started. Remember that what you're not aware of controls you. Self-awareness is critical for healing low self-esteem. Self-awareness is poisonous to low self-esteem, which thrives on a lack of awareness. Now, it's really hard to be aware in the moment, especially if you're used to not being aware. How are you supposed to remember something that you're not even aware of? So, try this. Go back over your day tonight and look for ways in which you may have personalized failure or avoided intimacy, or maybe you chose to be less than perfectly honest with yourself or someone else. Over time, you'll notice things closer and closer to when they happen until it gets so close to when they happen that it feels more awkward in the moment to let low self-esteem play out than to make a change. Another thing you can do to increase awareness is when you're thinking back on a difficult conversation or interaction with somebody else, practice focusing on yourself rather than what the other person said or did. Ask yourself, what did I bring to the table? What was I really feeling? What was I wanting to protect when I said that? Don't deny or resist your critical or neglectful attitudes toward yourself. Just observe them. And be honest with yourself. So awareness is the first avenue and a critical avenue for healing low self-esteem. The second one, the C in the ACT, ACT, is communication. You don't have to keep yourself to yourself. Choose someone safe enough to share your real self with. And I'm not talking about being one of those people who tells everyone everything in the interest of honesty. But risk communicating to someone about who you really are. Try admitting that you don't know something, or telling someone they disappointed you. Or if it's difficult for you, ask for help, or let someone see you cry. Communication is a necessary risk for healing low self-esteem, and it does feel risky. Remember when we talked about intimacy? If I don't like who I am and I'm afraid that I'm not good enough, I don't want you to see all my flaws. You're just going to reject me. Remember, your self-esteem was formed in relationship to other people, not in a vacuum. And healing takes place the same way, with other people. If you can't communicate who you are, who you really are, you can never experience acceptance. And if you can't experience acceptance, you don't really have a model for self-acceptance. There's no substitute for communication in healing low self-esteem. Which brings us to the third avenue, T, therapy. Therapy can help with the foregoing to awareness and communication. A good therapist will guide you toward awareness and will help you feel safe communicating who you really are. And this is what worked for me. therapy made it possible, provided a framework for me to use awareness and communication to experience acceptance. My therapist heard who I was and let me know that I was okay. I was acceptable. Far from becoming dependent on her, I was able to use our work together to create a new model for the, if you look back at handout one, there's a big person and a little person inside of you. I got a new model for that big person, the caregiver. I learned how I could treat that little person, the authentic me, with compassion rather than criticism or neglect. So, see how we're doing for time. We looked at the 7 signs and symptoms of low self-esteem: personalizing failure, avoiding intimacy, being dishonest, being passive, avoiding mistakes, feeling insecure, and having relationship problems. And I mentioned that these behaviors have a reciprocal relationship with self-esteem. They reinforce each other. They reinforce each other, and they reinforce your level of self-esteem. We saw how low self-esteem is the result of an injury to your sense of self-worth while you were developing your identity, and how you carry inside of you now the general tone of those early relationships. So the tone of this relationship reflects your current level of self-esteem. To the extent that you're loving and nurturing, your self-esteem will be healthy and natural. To the extent that you're critical, you will continue to suffer from low self-esteem. And to the extent that you neglect yourself, you'll find it hard to know yourself, let alone esteem yourself. So I talked about solutions by way of 3 avenues for healing: awareness, communication, and therapy. These are the areas that will be fruitful for you to pay attention to. So I have a question for you. Given everything that we've talked about, what is one action you want to take in one of these areas immediately? I'm sure you have questions, and I look forward to answering them in the time we have left. And if we have time after that, I have a little bit more to say.
Great. So you're ready for questions and
yeah, let me take
to share
questions.
About it?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So, again, we'd love to hear from you, and I really hope there are those of you that are willing to speak up. I don't want to, of course, not force anybody, but it certainly makes the experience more rich, and you've got some great time here with Tina, so feel free to take advantage of it. You can unmute your phone by pressing *6 on your telephone keypad.
Tina, it's Betsy. I have to be leaving because I have to take care of my mom with Alzheimer's, and my sister's mm-hmm. going to be bringing her back. So you're talking about handouts. I don't have any handouts. A friend sent me this information to get on today, which I did. So I don't know how to obtain more information. Is it possible?
Yeah, so the handout was sent to you in an email, a reminder that was sent out yesterday and I believe today. So in the email, there's a link where you can download that.
Because like I told you, it was sent to a friend. A friend told me about this tonight. So,
okay.
Privately, all the pie charts and whatnot.
Yeah, so you can contact us. If you go to goodtherapy.org and go to the Contact Us page, just send an email to the support department, and we can certainly send you that handout.
Okay. I do appreciate it. Thank you for your time, and it's very interesting. I wish I could stay on longer, but unfortunately I can't. And I know most of my self-esteem is rooted from when I was small. That's why I mentioned it. Traumatic events that happened when I was small that are still very much ingrained inside of me. But, I have homework to do and things to deal with. But once again, thank you for your time, and I hope sometime to be able to come back on. Are you going to be discussing different subjects or the same thing again?
Different subjects, although we may have Tina back another time. Yeah, and you can certainly check back at thetherapy.org to find out.
Okay, I don't want to take up time from somebody else that needs to talk, but once again, thank you, and the others be helped through your talk, Tina. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being here and for sharing. Take care.
Yeah, thank you. I'm realizing now that although we sent that link out in the email, that some people may not have received that reminder email. And if you'd like to download this, and boy, God, is this low self-esteem coming out, Tina? I'm frustrated that I didn't give this out earlier. The link where you can download the handout is goodtherapy.org/public -download.html. So goodtherapy.org/public -download.html. And if you go to that link, you can download the handout. But I'm assuming most people have it since no one else mentioned it. We've got lots more time for questions, comments, feedback. You can unmute your phone by pressing *6.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. My question piggybacks on the previous person's scenario. If you've had years and years of feeling shame and guilt, and it's acute depression, is therapy enough, or should it be in conjunction with something else?
Wow, that's a great question. So you're saying that you're wondering if so much shame and guilt has been going on for years leading to a pretty deep depression, is it maybe necessary to take medication in conjunction with therapy?
Yes.
Wow. You know, Noah, I know that you have some pretty good stuff to say about this. I wonder if you could say a few things there.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I guess I would preface my answer with saying that, there's no overriding rule that I can say about that. I'm not a physician. I don't prescribe medication. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm a psychotherapist, and so my general method of healing is through meeting with people face-to-face and through the talking and the therapeutic relationship. And it's easy as therapists to believe that everything can be solved through therapy. What's that saying? To a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? So I have very mixed feelings about medication, and I definitely think that if you're in therapy or you have concerns, you should consult with your therapist or a psychiatrist about it in all cases. And, it would be overstepping my bounds to make any recommendations, especially for someone that I know nothing about. But I will say this, that I think that most problems, and this is just from my experience doing therapy for a lot of years, most problems are caused by what happens to us in life, and we can solve them by dealing with those things that have happened to us, whether that's in therapy or through other things. There are people do have organic issues. There are some forms of depression and schizophrenia and other what are labeled as disorders that are genetic or biological or what we call organic, and no amount of therapy may help with those things. But I will say that I think medication can be very, very useful for those people that are paralyzed with anxiety mm-hmm. and cannot function because of it, and for those people that are so depressed they can't get out of bed in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes medication is a great way to sort of stabilize and get yourself to the place where you can function and actually go into therapy. The downside is a lot of medications, psychotropics, have a flattening effect and actually kind of block access to the feelings that oftentimes need to be felt in order to heal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very important, if you're in therapy or dealing with these things, to get your therapist or your psychiatrist's opinion. And and medication is unfortunately an experimental process. You know, there are different medications, there are different dosages, and everybody's mm-hmm. chemistry is different. So there are a couple articles on goodtherapy.org that I would encourage you to read that elaborates further on this.
Mm-hmm.
I think I may struggle in telling you where you can find them on our site right now. I believe under the Explore Therapy menu there's an article called Psychotropic Medication.
Okay.
And there's some really good resources there. On that page, you'll also see a link to an article called Doctor, Do You Think I Need Medication?
Okay.
So I would encourage you to look through those resources and definitely to find a professional you can consult with about it.
Okay. One final question from me. Is that also where I would find the article on self-esteem that Tina mentioned under the Explore Therapy?
Yeah.
That's under issues treated in therapy. And self-esteem.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. If you go to the Explore Therapy menu and scroll down to Issues Treated in Therapy,
okay,
you'll find the self-esteem page there listed.
Thanks.
And I think what we'll do is in the email that we send out tomorrow, we'll include a link to these medication resources as well as to the self-esteem article.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the question.
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, I have a question for you.
Sure.
I find that I struggle with honesty because I'm afraid of hurting their feelings. I'm more concerned with the way they're going to feel if I'm honest versus the way I feel about being honest.
Right, so it feels like you're kind of taking care of them by maybe not giving them the whole truth sometimes.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I just want to kind of maybe tiptoe around it or give them a little bit, but not the full.
Protective.
I want to be protective. I want to protect their feelings.
Yeah, and that's something that is totally socially sanctioned. I mean, that's talked about in society. Well, you don't want to tell Grandpa that, you know, or let so-and-so down easy.
Right,
it's
right.
It's really something that we learn to do. This is a great example of something that I would look at as an awareness exercise. What you could do is think about what would it be like for me for that person to be upset by what I say.
Reverse the role?
No, keep yourself the one telling the truth and then imagine the reaction that you're concerned about. And then think, what would that be like for me if this person had that reaction to what I said to them?
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Did that answer your question?
It does. It does. I also think that I need to just say what I feel. I mean, obviously watch the words that I use and not be so concerned or overwhelmed with how they're going to take it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good impulse to think about what you say to other people. It's certainly pro-social to choose your words in a kind way.
Right.
It's not either or, where either I blurt out the truth and devastate the person or I protect them entirely from it. There's a middle ground, I think, where you can commit to yourself to being honest and then spend the rest of your energy finding a, you know, the most thoughtful way to do that. But that does require kind of tolerating any concerns that you might have about hurting their feelings, even despite your kindness. Some things, you know, no matter how you say them, you're going to get a reaction.
Right.
So those are feelings that you must tolerate when you approach that task. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
You don't want to internalize the bad feelings.
I do. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Great.
Well,
hello?
Do you have time to give us the 8 signs of good self-esteem?
8 signs of healthy self-esteem?
Yes.
I didn't prepare 8 signs of healthy self-esteem, but let's see if we can turn around.
I thought you mentioned it at the beginning.
No, I have 7 signs of low self-esteem, but if we turn those around, we can pretty easily make those into their opposite.
So we're not fear of rejection and fear of acceptance and that kind of stuff.
Are you referring to the things that I mentioned in the beginning?
Yeah. I thought you had said that. I had typed it, so.
Oh.
But I can flip those. I'm able to do that.
Do you want to go through those together and see if we can do that together?
Sure.
So rather than personalizing failure, the person with healthy self-esteem takes a balanced view of failure.
Okay.
They look at the situation and say, what did I bring to the table? And what can I do better next time? But a failure is not an indication that I am worthless. It may be an indication that I you know, didn't do something the way that I should have or wanted to, but that's not a reflection on my absolute worth as a person. So the healthy self-esteem takes a balanced view of failure. You know, sometimes it's said that a person with healthy self-esteem, it's mistakenly said that they think everything they do is great. And that is not healthy self-esteem. That's delusion. High self-esteem recognizes, okay, I didn't do that well. That doesn't mean I'm a rotten person or a mess up. It just means that I didn't do that well. So that's the balanced view. The second one would be embracing intimacy. Wanting to share oneself and wanting to know other people. And the third thing would just be honesty. And that would, of course, be balanced honesty, taking into account other people's feelings. Self-esteem is other esteem. When you have high, healthy self-esteem, you esteem other people. You don't have any desire to make them smaller so that you can feel bigger. When you feel great about yourself, you want everyone to feel great about themselves.
So true encouragement, that you're stating things that are true about them.
Okay. I'm sorry, I was adjusting my headset there. You said true encouragement?
Yeah. Not just false flattery, but
exactly.
Good things.
Yeah. When you feel good about yourself, you can be generous. Your bucket is full. You have a lot to give to someone else.
Okay.
So then the opposite of passivity would be activity or being proactive in your life. Not being afraid to take calculated risks. Things that are worth doing often involve risks. You'd be risking making mistakes by trying something new. And actually, that would be the fifth thing if we turn around avoiding mistakes. Doesn't fear mistakes. I mean, I don't know anybody who loves making mistakes. I don't. But I guess a willingness to risk making mistakes would be a sign of healthy self-esteem.
We often learn more from our mistakes than we do just by...
We do. It's painful, but we do. And then the sixth symptom of low self-esteem was insecurity. If we turn that around, there's a lovely feeling of security that comes from knowing, ah, you know, I'm basically okay. I may not always get it right. I may make mistakes. But I belong here on this earth. There's a place for me. I'm acceptable, essentially. I don't have to prove myself every minute of the day. And I'll call that security or self-acceptance. And then the seventh symptom of low self-esteem was relationship problems. People with healthy self-esteem tend to attract to other people with healthy self-esteem, and they enjoy very fulfilling relationships. It's not that they don't ever have problems. It's not that they never fight or have words or have confrontations, but they tend to work through them and maintain their relationship that they want to maintain.
So that would be a person that, when you're resolving a conflict, doesn't have to be loud or threatening, but is able to state their fact and then come to a resolution without being too big about their emotion?
Let's see. You're talking about specific behaviors. You're saying that some people are loud and emotional when they argue.
Yeah.
And that others are calm and rational. Well, you know, I will say this. When your self-esteem is high, you have a greater sense of empowerment. And you're less likely, although it's not that a person with high self-esteem never does anything that a person with low self-esteem would do, but high self-esteem makes you feel more empowered, and so you are less likely to act out rather than taking responsibility for communicating in a clear, direct, and rational way. But it's not like people with high self-esteem never let their emotions get the best of them.
No.
I mean, you know, we live in an imperfect world, and would that healthy self-esteem would make us perfect people, but I don't think it does.
Okay.
But that's not the goal.
Right.
The goal is to enjoy being in your own skin and living your life.
All right.
Well, I think I just went in a little circle there. Did that answer
that was
the
helpful. Thank you so much.
Issue that you brought up with the relationship problems?
Yes. Yeah. This whole thing was very, very helpful. Thank you so much.
Great. You're so welcome. Thank you for your question.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that was a fun exercise to turn it around.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've still got more time to take questions or for Tina to take questions. We'd love to hear from you, and you can unmute your phone by pressing *6. Anyone else? I just heard somebody unmute, a couple people on mute.
Yeah, and I'm still trying to figure out how to place my question. I found the three avenues of healing, you know, the ACT, awareness, communication, and therapy, really pointed me in the right direction, and communication, it has always been a problem for me. But aren't there certain personality types that don't communicate well? I'm thinking of, you can't change yourself from being an introvert. And expressing what you're feeling can be not just, it's not necessarily being unhealthy, it's just being who you are. Did that make any sense?
Expressing yourself is not necessarily being
unhealthy. The only way I can explain this. I'm if you the Briggs-Myers tests and
yep.
So on and so forth. I'm INTP. I'm introverted. I think very complexly, and it's hard for me to communicate.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate your question, because there are a lot of introverts out there who I think would have this question too, and I love to be able to say, I think that an introvert can communicate beautifully. If you're expecting yourself to communicate like an extrovert, that's not going to work very well. But introverts are very deep thinkers, very thoughtful people, and are just as you know, just as interested in relationship and connection as anyone else. You said that communication is difficult for you.
Yeah.
Can you?
Well, like I was even just putting that in a question.
Mm-hmm.
I still didn't do it. I still didn't come up with a question.
Well, that's okay. Let's see. Well, I don't think you can change from being an introvert to an extrovert, and I wouldn't want to if I were you.
Yeah.
I think introverts
mm-hmm.
have a lot of strengths. But difficulty with communication can come. Are you thinking that low self-esteem is at play here?
No, I'm saying low self-esteem would be a separate question, but uh-huh. but the communication part of that is I'm just finding more difficult.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me? Hello?
Hello?
Yes. I think the question is, like, how do we communicate for the thoughts that we have in our minds, you know, that are complex and that you said you have a hard time with communication, which is the same as me also.
Mm-hmm.
But, so, yeah, I guess it's like, how do we communicate our thoughts or our, even that's a hard thing to answer.
There seem to be a few questions that I hear, and Tina, I'm sorry to break in here, but I'm just dying to say this, that I don't think introversion or having difficulty communicating necessarily means you have low self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
It could be. It probably depends on why you're having difficulty communicating. So, my sense is, Tina, that the caller was really asking, well, if I have difficulty communicating, does that mean that I have self-esteem, or maybe that's just my personality style?
Right. Well, then I'm with you all the way. No, I don't think there's a necessary correlation.
Yeah.
There.
Is that right? Is that what you were asking?
Well, it was more like how do I begin working out the self-esteem problems when I feel that a major part of the steps to take to get through the problems would be communicating more easily, more readily.
Right. How do you feel about writing?
Oh, I write well.
Well, for you, maybe writing is the avenue, the preferred avenue
mm-hmm.
of communication. You might start by writing a journal, writing to yourself, working through
mm-hmm.
your thoughts and feelings, and you might choose to share your writing with someone safe.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks. It was a good topic, important difference to make, and great suggestion. So, we've got time, I guess, maybe for one more question, and then we're going to have to begin wrapping up. Anyone else interested? We'd love to hear from you.
I have a question.
Okay.
For the opposite of being passive, would be being active, and I mean, like, I could set goals, but I'll never look at them again, or, like, it's like, how do I, like, make things that I would want to complete them, or pursue them, I guess, or I guess this is a choice, right?
Well, it sounds like you're talking about formalizing your goal setting. You're saying
mm-hmm.
that, you know, I might write something down, I might write a list, but I don't look at it again, and so my goals don't get done. And, you know, formal goal setting is something that is certainly worth doing, but it's a little bit different from what I'm talking about, and that's why it's great that you brought this up. When I was talking about setting and working toward goals as being a sign of higher self-esteem, it really doesn't necessarily entail a formalized process. I'm not saying that if you don't write down your goals and you know, make a point of working and checking off your list, then you have low self-esteem. Not at all. A person with healthy self-esteem has goals.
Mm-hmm.
They have things they want to do, and they do them. You don't
mm-hmm.
have to write a list.
You
just
yeah, but
know
see.
What you
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's like I have all these things that I would like love to learn and to do,
mm-hmm.
but it's like I never get to them. I mean, clearly this is like I'm a passive kind of person, but
mm.
you know,
yeah,
I think it's.
It sounds like there's maybe something going on where that gets in your way.
Mm-hmm.
It might
mm-hmm.
have something to do with some self-neglect. Maybe it feels like your goals are not important
yeah.
enough for you to work on, or
mm-hmm.
maybe it's scary to try in case it doesn't work out. Sometimes it feels better to have potential than to actually try to go for it, because if it doesn't
right.
work out, your potential is gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's
and
scary.
Then also, yeah, it is. And then as far as like avoiding intimacy type of thing,
mm-hmm.
it's like around some people, it's like I just feel like I have like all this fear in me, so I close up and just walk away and look as if I were stuck up, and you know, I don't want people to think I am. It's like I would love to talk to you, but it's just like I don't have any guts to say hi or say hello, you know?
Yeah, I'm afraid that's a really common problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is scary to put yourself out there.
Yeah, but...
And so often.
You just gotta get yourself out there, right? Take chances?
I'm sorry?
I said take chances.
Take chances. But also honor those feelings inside of you that are
mm-hmm.
scared. Honor that fear. What is that fear? You know, how long has that been there?
Probably since, like, I was a little girl.
Mm-hmm. So that seems like something that's worth exploring.
Yeah.
I don't think that's something you can just discard and throw out and push away and work through without really exploring what
oh.
that is.
Okay.
Sounds
yeah.
like it's trying to protect you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for the question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would really second what Tina said, that so often when we have some sort of problem like that, it's easy to start talking about what we should do, as you mentioned, just like, you know, push through it, take a chance. I think as a culture, that's what we try to do. We try to get over it, suck it up, pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, push ourselves through it, force ourselves, and what I hear Tina suggesting is that instead you be really curious about that. So rather than trying to force yourself into taking a leap of faith, reaching out and talking to a stranger or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
To take the time to be really curious about what the fear is. And that's what's beautiful about therapy, is it creates that safe space to be able to do that. And, you know, it's a lot easier to run from these places than to go and look at them. So I would certainly encourage you to look at that. and therapy sure. can be a helpful way to look at it. So thanks for sharing.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah. So, Tina, I want to thank you for giving me a chance to chime in. I normally don't get a chance to chime in on these teleconferences, and it was fun to do that. So thanks for being open.
You've got a lot of great stuff to share, Noah, so it's my pleasure.
Oh, thank you. Well, I feel the same way. I really appreciated the time that you gave us today, and I have some words to say, but before I do that, any closing remarks on your end?
No, just I guess I would just say if you attended this teleconference, you have, I mean, that's a sign of self-esteem. You have said to yourself, I'm worth taking the time to learn about this. I'm worth that. And so know that you're not starting from zero. And I very much appreciate your being here, and I wish you the very, very best.
Well, Tina, that's a really just great way to look at it. And it's thank you for saying that. And, you know, I guess I'm compelled to say that just as a reminder to everyone on the line, for those of you that don't feel this or haven't thought this, because some of you have, which is that we're all born these loving, lovable little people, and we come into the world equipped to feel good about ourselves and to feel happy and peaceful and satisfied. And unfortunately in life, excuse my words, but shit happens, and we get burdened, and we carry extreme feelings, extreme beliefs inside of ourselves, and there is a way to deal with those. We're not taught the way, or typically, for most of us, our parents didn't know the way. So, but there are ways to do that, and a big part of it is just being okay with where we're at. You know, we're all in process. We're all human. We're all on our own journey. We all suffer in our own way, and it's really a major kind of growth process, this life. So, thanks to all of you for taking the time to be here today. And Tina, I have so much gratitude to you for taking the time to put this together and to spend with us and for giving goodtherapy.org the opportunity to share you with this community, with our site visitors. It's just such a wonderful resource, and I think this recording is going to be great to have. It's such an important topic. I think, you know, if you don't struggle with self-esteem issues, then your self-esteem is probably inflated, you know, or who knows what, because I think most of us do, and I think that, you know, this talk and the recording will be really helpful for a lot of people. So thanks, Tina, for all of your work and all of your thoughts and all of the contributions you've made to goodtherapy.org over the last couple years.
You're so welcome, Noah, and thank you for hosting and making
it possible. Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. So I hope we can do some more of these, and it would be lovely to connect with you back channel and to talk about it.
That sounds great to me.
Okay. Okay. So, again, thanks to everyone for being here. We will send a follow-up email tomorrow with links to the resources we mentioned. And for those of you that would like more information about Tina and her work, I really encourage you to take a look at Tina's website. It's tinagilbertson.com. www.tinagilbertson.com. And again, we'll include that resource in a follow-up email. So many blessings to all of you. Thank you so much for being here today. And I really hope that you got what you were looking for.
Me too. Bye-bye, everyone.
Okay.
Thank you all so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks.